1, 2,
yep, three. I'm good. We're synced.
All right, fuck it. Let's do it. And welcome to ELO Punters episode. I don't even know, but we're back, boys. What's up? What's going on? Bob, Daniel, how you doing?
Really good. Really happy to be back. It also says in the show notes it's episode 23, so just FYI.
And welcome to episode 23, because Bob's a stickler for it. Daniel, how you doing, dude?
I feel like somebody just opened up their hand and has a ragavan and they won the die roll. You know what I mean? Can't
Ooh,
be better.
Already getting into the topics here. Well, welcome everybody to this episode. Today we're going to talk about a lot of stuff because a lot of things have changed in Legacy. And the first thing that we're going to do, as we always do, is thanks to the new patrons. We've got Andy M. and Joao. We appreciate that. Appreciate that very, very, very much. And also thank you to at Ellie of the Veil. That's Liz, our editor. Great editing. And, you know, honestly, we'd sound like monkeys without her, which is... Well, you know, not a bad thing nowadays, right? So, before we get into the actual stuff, because we got a lot of sequence, first we're going to talk about us, then we're going to talk about some Twitter questions that we got, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes. So, you know, skip around if you want to hit what you want to hit here. But, Bob, Daniel, it looks like we're finally getting closure on the pandemic. It's been a while since we actually did the podcast, and I imagine a lot of stuff has happened for all of us since then. So, what up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I got vaccinated, super happy to be out and about. I went to my LGS Curio Cavern in Springfield, Virginia for a tournament for the first time in well over a year. And so that was awesome, getting to see some friends again and hang out and sling some real paper magic. So that was awesome.
Did you play Historic, the new format?
I don't play Arena, so no.
No, it's just the joke in paper because it's different now. The formats are crazy.
Well, yeah, did you apparently play? Brainstorm's like one of the best cards in Historic.
Dude, I heard that Seth Manfield only played 3 Brainstorms in his Historic like top 8 deck or whatever, which kind of just blows my mind. I've seen 3 Brainstorm before in like a Legacy deck on Reddit like a long, long, long time ago. I'm not going to go into it because I don't want to endorse the idea any more than I already have. I feel like this is too much clout for 3 Brainstorm.
I played 3 Brainstorm when I like top 8ed
a
challenge.
Stop. All right, Daniel. Yeah, oh wait, and me, right? So what about me?
That's how scholars are going to look back on your 3 Abundant Harvest. We don't want to talk about 3 Abundant Harvest, you know what I mean?
Dude, I'm a trendsetter. Nobody else plays this card. I dictate what the scholars will say. Like years from now, aliens will come down into society and they'll be like, this Uttarak guy, who is he? Wow, very handsome and mighty. And I'll be like, yes, I was. No, but for myself... what did I do? I also have been vaccinated. The other day I went to the movies like in person, which was kind of just a very exciting event. Like I love watching movies. I'll watch shitty movies, but just like being at the theaters, like in the zone, just like watching something where I can literally just like put everything else away and just like focus on one thing that may or may not matter. You know, I'm not afraid to walk out of a movie if it's bad. It was just nice. You know, my wife loves it too. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to just getting back to what was before, you know, just like a normal lifestyle. So that's kind of nice. Also, I'm moving to San Francisco, which is going to be pretty sweet. My wife got a doctor job there. My doctor wife, she got a doctor job at the doctor city at the doctor place. And yeah, my doctor wife. No, just kidding. It's going to be pretty exciting because as sad as I am to leave San Diego, moving to San Francisco to hang out with my friends there, you know, Rosemary and Ved, good friends of mine. And then also to check out like, basically, the Bay Area has a really, really sweet Legacy scene, and I want to be a part of that in any way possible. I know that, unfortunately, like the CFB game store has closed down indefinitely as CFB sort of migrates to their whole like marketplace thing or whatever, but that's whatever it is. But I, you know, I feel like in the last year, I've learned that I now have the power to make things happen. You know, like taking sort of like a leadership role is definitely well within, you know, my gates. And especially if like Ved is there too, like the two of us should be able to like get shit together, get shit done. Cause he's helped with a lot of like the octagons and things like that. And I'm optimistic about the future. And
so I guess, like, are you basically just saying that you're going to organize tournaments and breweries in San Francisco? Is that where
that
you're
would
going?
Be legit. I'm dead ass serious because remember, like, there was the, what was that event that we went to? It was the Dice City Games Brewery event. And I feel like that was one of the sickest events that I've ever been to just because it was at a brewery. You know what I mean? The vibes were totally like relaxed and casual. I have to imagine that the rental space, like logistics wise, was cheaper than going to like a center or like a hotel or something like that. Plus, there's fucking alcohol there, man. Like, that's great. So, you know.
I think the only downside is you'll have to learn how to use like Magic tournament software.
Oh, I will get around that by finding like a local game store to like, you know, partner with, and then I will get them to do that. You see what I'm saying? That's,
ooh,
that's
smart.
My plan.
Delegation.
Delegation,
that's true leadership.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be great, and I'm looking forward to that. Let's talk about some of these Twitter questions, though, because it's this is going to be a long episode, or at least a very densely packed episode. So first question by Kai Sawatari at SawatariX, who's got great artwork, by the way. Check out his website if you want any alters. Highly recommend him. What do you guys have for lunch?
I had string beans and tofu and couscous.
That's actually, that sounds pretty healthy. What the hell?
Yeah, no, I only eat healthy food now that I live with my girlfriend. She just cooks healthy shit. Like, it's kind of annoying, but it's kind of good at the same time.
Wait, I'm jealous. Can she, like, cook for me too, please? No?
We'll mail across country.
All right. I'm down. No, I'm dead ass serious, though. Like eating, especially, like, with relation to magic. So, like, the real question that Kai is asking is, like, what do you guys eat before big Magic Online events or just tournaments in general? Like, how do you do your, like, food and dieting and stuff like that? I feel like that's actually, like, a really important thing. Like, the one thing that I've learned is, like, do not overeat. Do not eat greasy food that'll make you feel bloated in the afternoon when you need to, like, power through rounds, things like that. And then also, the obvious one is just, like, literally just, like, have your head, like, in a bucket of water at all times and just constantly hydrate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely agreed on those. So it's weird for me. I don't know if it's like that for you too, but during Magic tournaments, I just eat way less than I normally would. Like, yeah, I'll have like a snack to make sure I'm not like super starving or like a bar or whatever, but like oftentimes I like skip meals. But in real life, like I'm very punctual about eating my lunch, but in Magic land, I'm just like, I don't need food. I just need to, you know, keep going.
Yeah.
I like to drink a lot, like tea or water or juice, depending. You have to be careful because sometimes, like, if I drink juice now, it might get a bit too crazy. So maybe it's tea. So it's really, you have to be really, you know, might, you have to time the mango lassis correctly.
Yeah, mango lassis, let's go.
I definitely like to eat a lot to give you energy, to give you brain power. You know what I mean? I heard a lot of people say it's important, you know, like Chris Kvartek and Gary Thompson. They said it's really important to so that your brain works properly or something. So it's definitely important to feel good when you play the tournament so you can focus more easily.
Is there anything like particularly you like to eat, like nuts and bolts and things like that?
Well, I'm not the best dietitian. Like, I usually go for like bread, just like bread or cereal or very minimal stuff. Like I'll put like just some make some toast and put some cream cheese or jam, like just so it's not too distracting. Maybe some cereal. Nothing go to fruits, a lot of fruits, bananas,
fruits are a good tournament snack. And then I do eat breakfast. Like I eat like a decent sized breakfast before I play, but I'm just saying like lunch, I can like either skip it or do something small, like bars and stuff.
I'm in Bob's camp where I basically like I'll eat in the morning before I get there. I'll have a cup of coffee and I can't eat during the day. I remember like an event. It was an SCG event where back when I first started Legacy and I was playing Sneak and Show, and like I ate lunch like at the concession stand. Like I got something, I ate it. And then like round 7 or 8, I was like, my brain just like turned off. I was like falling asleep at the table. And after that, I was like, I'm just never going to do this again. I just need like not to get worn down. But then the downside is like when I don't eat like during the tournament, at the end of the day, I'm so hungry and like I overeat massively wherever I go to get dinner. And like, I mean, it's a Magic tournament, right? So you're gonna go out with friends, you're gonna go to like a place where you're gonna get like, you know, like a burger and fries and a drink, and like health wise like it's not good at all, but like in terms of like me like wanting to do well at Magic, like this is like how I do it. I just like I sacrifice my health for mental clarity, and then it's a weird trade-off, but like actually now that I think about it, it's probably like this is a toxic relationship, but that's what I do. So I don't know if that's a good answer. I probably shouldn't teach this to the kids, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we're all like somewhat similar, but I think of the post Magic tournament meal as like kind of a cathartic experience. You know, you starved yourself all day, you like put your mind to the grindstone, and then like you're just like pigging out as like a very base reward.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, I made it through the day. All right, Daniel, I'm going to give you first dibs at this next question. It's, will tempo shells survive without daze? If not, will fair blue shells converge to mid-range and control? And even if they do, will they be closer to prowess decks like we see in Modern, or mid-rangey like we see right now? That's a loaded question, by the way, so take some time to think about it. Not too much time, though, because...
Okay, so just Daze is banned. Will Tempo Deck survive? I mean, that would be pretty interesting, because first of all, if Daze is banned, I don't know how much that would affect the format, because it kind of would re-incentivize the way decks are built. Like, I mean, maybe it wouldn't really, you know, affect that much in terms of the way people build their decks with keeping Daze in mind. You know, maybe decks would probably be pretty similar, so I'm just thinking.
I think with Daze banned, the biggest change is, like, 3-drops get way, way, way better, and 4-drops become more playable. Like, right now, those are, like, not super playable. I mean, obviously, they are, but if you just think of a regular deck, like, I don't know, Death and Taxes, when they don't have Aether Vial, they're just so susceptible to Daze. But then now it's like, okay, that's no longer a thing. So I think it just basically incentivizes people to play kind of up the curve and play more like 3-mana 2-for-1s, essentially.
One hilarious thing is that these control players who played some, like, four, I mean, you said D&T, but they play Carpet of Flowers to try and counter Daze sometimes, which is kind of funny. Well, I think, for example, if you look at Vintage Cube, usually there's all these powerful broken stuff you can do in Vintage Cube, but the best decks are usually just cheap interaction and cheap threats. So it makes sense that if they ban Daze, then Legacy, the best deck would just be cheap threats and cheap interaction still, based on that. But I'm not sure exactly what it would look like and exactly what threats they would choose. But, you know, maybe it would be kind of like, yeah, those 3-droppy with, like, Noble Hierarch kind of reduke decks. But, yeah, I'm not sure. But okay. Based on that, I would expect cheap spells to be good still.
Yeah, right, I don't know. So the interesting thing is, like...
One sec, Bob.
Do you think Daze is good in Delver against control? Like, I don't know that it's that good. I think it's fine. But, I don't know, maybe, like, if you went up the curve a little bit, you could still be effective. I don't know. I mean, Daze is obviously, like, one of the best cards. And... you know, a core of the Delver shell. So I feel like it's possible that everything, you know, just becomes blue soup, becomes mid range. And so that's like my worry about banning Daze.
Wait, yeah. Everything becomes blue soup if they ban Daze? What do you say?
So basically he's afraid that like all these decks are going to become like mid range piles that are like Uro and like Jace and like Ice Fang Quaddles and things like that.
Yeah, because like for a long time, Legacy didn't have card advantage, but now it has, you know, 1-mana card advantage in Veil of Summer, as Ice Fang Coatl, as Raghavan has 1-mana card advantage. There's just so many more cheap card advantage engines. So I think that's what's made Daze even more powerful than before. Before it was like your 1-mana threat would be a Delver or a Tarmogoyf, you know?
So I'm going to really quickly give the listeners just a little bit of context of why this is an important question. Earlier this week, or maybe I guess it was like late last week, we had two events. The first Legacy Challenge after Modern Horizons cards were introduced into the format. And then the day after, we had the first Legacy Showcase Qualifier Challenge thingy-majig. I don't know what it is, but basically the results for the second event on Sunday, it was a 200-player event, and the results were kind of alarming. And so this is kind of our first topic of the day. I'm just like use like a segue here, just continue talking about it. But basically what happened was Blue-Red Delver just destroyed the event. So, Bob, you have the stats on there, right? Like, what were the results for that?
So it was about 26% of the format, and this is based on kind of collecting all the legacy data. Shout out to Volrath XP. And so it was only 26% of played decks, but then it was 41% of the 6-2 or better results. So that's a pretty big gain, and it had a non-mirror win percentage of 58%. Usually in the past when Wizards has banned decks before, or banned cards before, they've cited like a 55% non-mirror win rate. So 58% is significantly higher than that. It's not, necessarily, you know, a small sample size anymore with these two events that it's dominated, and just kind of the feel, of playing the deck. It's very difficult to attack. You know, it plays basic lands. It's the same regular Delver cards plus Force of Will and Force of Negation against the random stuff. And then you also have, you know, a much faster clock and more one drops. So it's just like I described it as kind of the best Delver has been relative to the rest of the meta, possibly since Lurrus, and possibly even better than that.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna just, I'll say what it's on everyone's mind right now, which is that it's just so exhausting to literally, the set came out like last week and we're already talking about bans. But like you mentioned, these results are actually pretty terrifying, right? Like 58% win rate is insane when you consider that before these cards came out, right? Like I'm talking like post, okay, well, not even post, okay. So when the Oko and Dreadhorde Arcanist were around, the win rate for this deck was about like 55%-ish, like teetering the line of to be banned or not to be banned, right? After Oko and Dreadhorde got banned, somehow the win rate actually stayed the same, but what was really interesting is that the floor, so like you have a confidence interval, right? Like you can say that it's, you can approximate how good it's going to do, but it can be within this range. The range actually tightened around that 55%. So in a weird way, Delver actually got better after the ban. And now that these cards are being introduced into the format, holy crap, man, jumping up another 3% is absolutely ridiculous. And Daniel, I know you had a really sweet list for the format, so maybe you can speak to like why this deck is suddenly doing so well. Like what were your conclusions? How did you build your deck for the event?
Well, I can say one thing that's even scarier, the scariest stat, the win rate you said is pretty good apparently, and people aren't even playing four Ragavans. Some of them aren't even playing Ragavans, so their win rate must be way lower than if everybody just played the same like four Ragavans. But anyway, about the list. Yeah, I played a list this weekend, the way I got to it was I was talking to some of those Zoomers, like Wombo Combo, the specialists, the Zoomers, and we started just looking at the new cards. They were testing it. So the new cards that came out that stood from Modern Horizons 2 was, we all know them now, the Dragon Rage Channeler. Whenever you cast a spell, surveil one, Ragavan, and Murktide Regent as the creatures. So it was like, how do you all integrate them into the list? So it kind of made sense to play four of the Surveil card. Then Ragavan numbers, you know, people were debating, you want 2, 3, 4. At first, I think people were kind of playing 3, but I watched Wombo Combo play some games, and every time he drew it, he basically instantly won for free, so I just put 4 in my list. And then, at first, people were like, oh, Murktide Regent, you know, is it better than a Serial Forager? And I was like, well, Delver's like the only good deck in the format, and it's better in the mirror, so I think it's better based on that. And then it's kind of like, we're like, it's kind of like Flying Hogak, because it's like a 2 mana for an 8/8 flyer. Like, that kind of efficiency is never before seen. It's actually kind of broken. Like, you know, people kind of play these Chalice decks to try and beat Delver, and literally, how would a Chalice deck ever beat Murktide Regent? It's like a 2 mana 8/8 flyer.
Like, I heard that giggle in your voice, dude. I heard it.
Yeah, it's like, it's literally, how do you beat that card? Like, it's literally the efficiency, it's literally a 2 mana 8/8 flyer. Like, how are people supposed to beat that? Because here's the thing about Delver in the past. In the past, people are like, oh yeah, I'll try and beat them in some scrappy games. Take, you know, maybe they'll play some small creatures and I'll win. And you know what I mean? And that's like 2 mana 8/8 flyer. Like, what the hell is that? Because it's actually a catch-up mechanic. You know, people say when Delver falls behind, it can't catch up. Well, if you pay 2 mana for 8/8 flyer, you're actually catching up, because you're basically catching up on board by that. And yeah. Anyway, so I put about, yeah, I was debating like playing 3 or 4, and I put 3. Because basically, if you play it in the mirror, like, how does your opponent win game one if they don't play like main deck Power Blast or, you know, Daze or Force It or a super head on board otherwise? And then, yeah, there was like debates about, like, for example, some people were like, oh, should we play Mishra's Bauble because it gives Delirium? And I just, so the Zoomers had been playing the deck, and I was just like, have you guys had issues getting Delirium? And they were like, no. So I'm like, okay, I guess if we don't need it for Delirium, I just won't play it then, so we could just play all like a smooth build all around. I mean, I'm not sure about Bauble. I had bad experiences with it in the past, though. It's just, I find it makes the deck feel pretty awkward. And then there's expressive iteration numbers. Some people have 2, 3, 4, because it's interesting because the curve got a lot lower. So I'm not sure exactly. I played 2 this weekend, but I might try 3 next, like cutting down the preordains I played to play 3. Some people even had 4. It does kind of remind you of Dig Through Time in the way that it's like 2 mana, look at the top X cards and pick 2, but so that'll be interesting. One interesting thing is a lot of people played 3 Wasteland. I also played 3 Wasteland too, and I know some people think it's kind of weird because of 4. And I think it is kind of weird that everybody kind of played 3 Wasteland, because I thought that was just kind of something that maybe I was doing or one other person was doing, so I thought it was kind of weird that I saw like a few lists doing it. But if I had to explain the reasoning, I would basically say it's that you're trying to make it so that you cast as many spells as possible. Like, maybe that sounds like a bad argument, but it's like when you have your lands in play, you want to maximize your ability to tap them to cast spells, or especially because what's relevant in the games is killing your opponent's Ragavans. So you want to try and fit more removal in, but also you want to fit cantrips so that like you have stuff to do with your removal. And
that's really interesting.
Also, I would say one thing about Wasteland. I'm kind of more anti-Wasteland than most people, because people in Legacy are usually like, Wasteland's broken. It's like one of the best cards of all time. It's super busted. It should be banned even. And I actually kind of dislike Wasteland. And I cut it a lot because if you look at it in theory, it actually always trades down, because you play Wasteland and your opponent literally tapped their land and got to use it for value. Meanwhile, you Wasteland them. Now, I'm not saying that's a good argument or something, but that's actually why I'm like really skeptical on Wasteland, because actually it's a card that opens you up to a position where you accept a trade that's bad for you, because you accept that your opponent used their land. Obviously, in theory, sometimes you get free wins off it. Sometimes you're like, oh, I'm so scared of Wasteland, because if they waste me, I'm going to lose, etc. And it is kind of weird to play three or four Wasteland, but basically, we want it to fit in all that stuff. But sorry, I interrupted you there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Bob, I'm not letting you talk over me.
Wow.
All right, ready. So, yeah. That's actually really interesting, because I really love the way that you really put it in terms of like mana utilization, which is something that in hyper efficient games like Delver Mirrors or just in Legacy in general, it feels like that's not something I would really think of. Like cutting the Wasteland, to me, I thought it was because like blue red Delver decks are playing basic island and it's just not a good land anymore. But like when you put it in terms of like just like vomiting your hand on the table and getting your proactive strategy down, that's like a really eye-opening way to look at just deck development and things. I don't think this is really explored topic, so really smart.
Yeah, I would say it's like you were saying, there's more card advantage now, and obviously it could be wrong. For example, some people were roasting people for playing three Wasteland. They're like, it's so bad. But it's kind of like when you like what's relevant to winning the game is like when you have these hands of all these super cheap cards, because it's actually funny, people are like, there's all these cheap cards, so that makes Wasteland better. But also it's like you have all these cheap cards and you want to be able to just keep pressing the advantage, keep casting spells. And if you just have lands in hand, then it's awkward because you can't actually use the lands you have in play if you just play more lands. But obviously it's kind of a tricky thing. I might look at 3 to 4 Wastelands, but yeah.
What were your experiences, Bob?
Well, I was just going to add, basically, some people came to the same conclusion, and I know Vuk, he cut all the Wastelands. I looked at it from a different perspective, which was, I was like, all right, how many decks in the meta is Wasteland good against? Because typically, Wasteland is good in the mirror, because, you know, you're both three-color decks, but if everybody's on blue-red Delver, then Wasteland is no longer good in the mirror, so that definitely takes away some of the equity. So, if I played it, I would also play, like, 2 to 3 Wastelands. There are some matchups where it's like needed or fills in some holes. For instance, like lands is a pretty big one. It also kills Urza's Saga. And one thing you can do against Urza's Saga is kill it with the trigger on the stack so they don't produce any mana. So in that way, you're not actually trading down. But I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting discussion. And I don't think you necessarily need to play four anymore, given that the predominant deck is blue red Delver.
Yeah. So I'm going to just move on to the next topic, or really not next topic, but like next subtopic, which is, Daniel, you were mentioning about how you had built your deck and you're talking about how like Murktide Regent was really good. I mean, and historically we do have a precedent for that. Like back in the day, like Tombstalker was just like the bee's knees, you know, like as soon as Murktide got spoiled, Dancing Urini was just like, he was just like drooling all over the mouth, and like he said he was drooling all over the mouth, like thinking about this card. And I mean, if you know Dan, like one of the OG Legacy players, like you know how much he loves that card. But I want to focus my attention on a different card, which is the much more efficient, much like, you know, more cheaply costed card, which is Raghavan, right? Which is the monkey pirate. And I know, Daniel, that you think really, really highly of this card, but Bob and I, when we played, we had some other experiences and opinions. So talk to me about the monkey and why you think this is a four of, why it's the next, like, you know, wave of Delver, the next whatever it is. Just say words. That's cool.
Yeah, so when those new cards came out, it was hard for everybody to get access to them, so I didn't get them on Modo right away. I mean, I even played a little bit on Untapped GG, which is like a Cockatrice app, to play some mirrors earlier in the week. So anyway, so I was watching Wombo Combo play a league on Modo, and he had Raghavan, and I just noticed, like, if he casted turn one, he would just, like, instantly, like, win the game, basically, like, freely. And I'm like, what the hell? That's so good. So then I built my own list on Modo, and I clicked the sample hand button, and my sample hand was, like, Raghavan, Daze, and, like, Volcanic. And I'm like, what the hell? Can I even lose from this spot? Yeah, so I put 4 Raghavans, and I was just like, this is so good. Like, I can explain why, because... Okay, let's say you're on the play and you go turn one Raghavan, and let's even say you have Daze. Okay, oh my god, how is your opponent supposed to win? Like, okay, it's like remember when Deathrite Shaman was legal and you had Deathrite Shaman Daze? It's like the same thing, because basically what happens is But it's even a bit better. What happens is you pass to them, and it's their turn one. So what are they supposed to do? Let's say they have one mana removal. Okay, you daze it, and then they pass back to you. Or what are their options? All their options are so bad. That's basically my slim way of putting it. Like, you're on the, if one player's on the play and they play daze, and they play Ragavan, like, what's the opponent supposed to do that's good? Obviously, there's stuff like you can gutshot it. You can play Caracas and bounce it. You could, you know, Force of Will or use your own daze or so on. But basically, my point is, if you're on the play and you just cast your one Ragavan, in my opinion, because I know not everybody has that high opinion of Ragavan, it's just your opponent's in such a bad spot. And the reason why is because some people might be like, okay, but what if you're playing against, like, Elves or Storm? And Storm, I think it would be good against, but, like, because you could hit Dark Ritual. But my point is, it's not even just the card's treasure so good. So I can explain why the treasure is so good. Because basically, the Delver deck is really low on lands and really low on mana sources. Basically, if you have the treasure, you just really swarm your opponent. Because making that extra mana is so useful in Delver. I mean, control players who are hearing this might not think the same thing, because they've been playing with Carpet of Flowers. They're like, what do you mean? I have infinite mana. It's not that useful. But basically, okay, I'll give you an example of what I mean. When you're playing Delver, you have a lot of one-land hands, or one-land wasteland hands, or even two-land hands. So as soon as you get that treasure, it just, like, makes you able to cast so many more spells and really swarm your opponent. I mean, every treasure you make is basically a Deathrite Shaman activation of you get a mana of any color. And basically, making that treasure makes it really hard for your opponent to get a foothold in the game, because getting that extra mana just means you're going to be casting so many spells. And now you even have Expressive Iteration, so it's not like you're going to be... It's pretty hard to flood. You even have the Surveil Delver guy, so if you have a high amount of lands, it's going to be really easy to find Expressive Iteration or Murktide Regent or Brainstorm. And, like, unless you're and even if you're flooding, it can even find spells that you just cast. But basically, I think when you're on the, like, when you cast Ragavan and you connect, it's such a squeeze on your opponent, the fact that you get treasure, because it makes it so hard for them to get back into the game, in my opinion. Because if you compare it to other creatures like Delver, well, it's just the 3/2, like, they just take 3 damage every turn. Obviously, that's good. And I know some people think like Ragavan's, not so good in some matchups. Like, I was in a chat this morning and saw Bob said, well, if you're against D&T, Ragavan's not that good. But imagine if you're—I know I say on the play a lot, so you're like, well, you're just choosing on the play. But, like, imagine if you're on the play against D&T and you play turn one Ragavan. Like, what are they going to do? They're going to plow it, and then you could, like, and then what if you counter it? And the thing is, one thing about Ragavan is it's actually good against Wasteland, and that's actually a concept. The threats that are good against Wasteland is pretty important in Legacy. Like, that's usually why Hooting Mandrills or Gurmag Angler is good. Because usually when you play Delver, your mana base is kind of under attack. It's under strain. So basically, if you play Ragavan out, it means that you're, like, basically protected from Wasteland a little bit, because your opponent can't Wasteland you. That means that you play Ragavan, it can actually, like, kind of let you develop your mana safely. I don't know, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a...
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. And
like, sometimes you go turn one Delver and then they just, like, Wasteland you and you're like, oh shit. But they get massively punished if they do that, right?
Yeah, but basically, if I had to say it in the most concise way, I would say the treasure... Like, getting the treasure is actually such a big deal in Delver, because Delver is a deck where you're going to have a lot of one-land hands or one-land wasteland hands, and just making the treasure is so absurd because the mileage you get out of the mana is so important. I mean, if you ever play with Deathrite Shaman, you know. But the thing is, even compared to Deathrite Shaman, I'm not saying one is better than the other, but this doesn't even just give you the mana. It gives you the mana, and it gives you cards at times, because it can give you cards from your opponent's deck. And it even has dash and haste. Like, this card, it just reminds me when they printed Hogak or, like, Murktide Regent. It's just, like, the efficiency is off the charts. It's hard to... It's like Urza Saga. It's like, how is this a real magic card? Like, it just does way, way too much. So that's why I'm so high on it. And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Bob, on the other side of the table, you and I, we actually played a lot of Magic together here because we were trying to explore the new cards on the day of, and we streamed some stuff here. And I feel like our experiences were a lot different. So maybe you can go through those real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly when the card was spoiled, I was like, this is busted. You're, you know, generating mana. It even has some advantages over Deathrite, because if you don't use the mana, then, you know, the following turn you can have, like, 4 mana. So you can, like, accrue mana in a sort of a different way. But that being said, I just, you know, we played against some matchups where we were basically never drawing a card. For instance, against, you know, Moon Stompy or Curse Stompy, there's a lot of cards that we don't even want to cast from their deck. But that's not as big of a deal as long as you're kind of, you know, generating mana, to Daniel's point. But then the real issue came when our opponent's deck just had random blockers. So we played against goblins, you know, they have random matrons. Against Death and Taxes, they might have, you know, Recruiter of the Guard lying around. Against elves, they might have Elvish Visionaries. And the problem arises when you basically draw the card in the mid game and your opponent has gummed up the ground. All the rest of your cards fly. So you can basically ignore the ground creatures, but if you draw Raghavan, then if you want it not to be a dead card, you need to kill all their ground creatures. So maybe it was kind of just my matchup spread. I looked at it again, and we had faced very few blue decks, so it was basically like, oh, I guess we can board this out on the draw, because it's, you know, going to be a little bit harder to make it connect. But on the play, I agree, it's definitely really, really good in almost every matchup. But on the draw against decks with a lot of creatures, it's like, okay, maybe you don't need as many because it's a little bit of a liability.
Yeah, I definitely remember, like, we ran into situations where, top decking it into an onboard Knight of the Reliquary, or even, like, elves, like, if they go, like, turn one, like, some sort of, like, Heritage Druid, right? Like, it just feels... It feels like, or let me put it this way. The card, in my opinion, when I first saw it, was like, just like you said, it was like so good, so busted. And then I quickly like came down to earth and kind of realized like, okay, maybe this card actually does have downsides. That isn't to say that it is not a good card. It is a very, very good card, but it does have a lot of like restrictions around like that. And you have to do a little bit of work sometimes to make it work. Other times you just go, you know, monkey days. Okay. And then you just like win the game. Right. So I think all in all, you know, this is definitely going to be a card that will define our format, you know, for some time here. I'm going to just quickly ask a question. I'll start with Daniel here, and then I'm going to quickly pivot to Bob. But Daniel, do you think this card is ban-worthy?
There's so many... I definitely think this card's not balanced, right? I mean, it's just the first week. Like, it seems not everybody's as excited about it as me. Not to drag on too long, but my first impression of this card is that it's not balanced at all. Like, it doesn't seem like a balanced card. Like,
holy shit,
like,
okay.
It reminds me of, like, Hogak or something. Like, yeah, I can elaborate on that more later. A quick sentence, like.
Okay, and Bob, what about you? I'm going to take that as a Daniel.
It does a little bit too much for its cost, but I don't know. I think I just need to play with it a little bit more. I think Delver is better because it's blue, and so it pitches the Force of Will, whereas Raghavan just kind of rots in your hand in the mid to late game. So I think Delver is a little bit better than Raghavan, but, you know, I could be wrong. We'll see.
Okay. I guess the reason I'm asking this question is because, like we were mentioning earlier, right, that 58% win rate in this first event with a high saturation of the X2 or better slots really indicates that this deck is just not going anywhere, right? And I kind of want to, like, think about where we are in the state of Magic and the state of Legacy and like how new cards are being treated and the sort of impact they have on Delver. So very specifically, I mean, I'm going to say it, right? Like, new cards get printed, like Raghavan, like Expressive Iteration. And, you know, when I saw Expressive Iteration, I was like, wow, this is really sweet. You know, I'm hoping that maybe, like, you know, my Jeskai Miracles deck that like is now defunct can come back maybe, right? You have like sweet two mana, interaction, card advantage, draw, whatever it is. And what ultimately happened, right? It wasn't good enough in Jeskai, and Delver adopted it, and now Delver is rocking card advantage at two mana, and it's just like winning games, all right? Like, or let's look at like another threat, right? Like Dreadhorde Arcanist, right? That's a sweet card, but, you know, I can't play it in my mid-range deck because Delver of Secrets is just going to put it in their deck, and they're just going to do everything better than I can, right? So I guess my question here is more around the lines of, like, you know, these new threats keep coming in, and I have to wonder if Delver is just going to constantly assimilate the good ones, right? If it's just going to constantly do that, at what point do we acknowledge that the problem isn't with the new cards themselves? Because, like, in a vacuum, if you don't have certain cards, maybe Raghavan's not as busted, right? Like, what if Daniel's sentence was like, all right, I have turn one Volcanic Raghavan, but that's where the sentence ends. There's no days, right? So at one point do we, like, change our view from looking at, oh, these new cards are really broken and busted, to, wait a minute, there's something serious going on here in the form of, maybe this shell is just really, really stupid good, and we have to do something about it.
Well, okay, so I think you need to add some context to this question. So, sure. You know, Legacy was first created in 2004, and basically since 2004, there has not been, until Fire, before Fire, there hasn't been a single year when there have been, like, more than one or two banned cards. Like, no matter how busted stuff was, like, even Treasure Cruise Dig Through Time, it was still only, like, two cards in one year. Now you fast forward to Fire 2019, we've had seven cards banned in the past 2 years. So the rate has just gone up through the roof, and it's because they're printing, you know, more powerful cards that snowball. And because these cards are so powerful in the early game, I mentioned this earlier, but it's the fact that you have card advantage stapled to kind of cheaper cards, then you add free magic, then that just equals kind of, you know, broken. So that's the context, is basically the way Wizards was printing cards, Delver and Daze were totally fine for the longest period of time. Now, with the way that they're printing cards, what's going to happen is, you know, we're going to go through these cycles over and over again of, if they keep printing this cheap card advantage, we'll have to keep banning it. Otherwise, Delver becomes overpowered yet again. So the options from here is, A, we keep going down this path of, you know, every year we might need to ban, you know, three or four cards, or we ban Daze. Those are kind of like the two options, assuming that Wizards kind of continues down this path of fire, which, you know, we have no power over.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So we're streaming this live, as always, if you're listening, and so feel free to tune in live for the next episode. But in the chat, Reeplecheap is saying that through this period of time that you're talking about, Daze has basically either always been tier zero or always been tier one. And honestly, this point that you're bringing up is that, like, either we can live the rest of our lives banning three or four cards every year, or we just say, finally, fuck it, you know, cut the arm off the thing or whatever, you know, like, and get rid of Daze entirely. Like, I don't know, but I think banning a card is it's just like such an unsatisfying, like, you know what I mean? Like from a design wise, from a gameplay wise, like, just like my, it just sours my Magic experience, right? Because it's not, it when it comes to Magic, it's not like these things happen immediately, right? And there's no way for us to, like, digitize nerfs and things like that. Although, you know, Arena is a different thing, and mad props to if Arena can become that kind of thing. That's the future, hopefully. But basically, like, I don't know, man. It's just like, there's so much negativity around it that it just, like, it makes Magic a lot less excitable when we're always constantly thinking about bans. So I don't know. I mean, like,
so by banning Daze, maybe we have to worry about bans a lot less. And I was thinking too, if you ban Daze, maybe you could unban Deathrite and Renin 6 and Dreadhorde Arcanist even. I don't know. So I mean, I agree. I think that's definitely a very valid opinion. And you know, if I could do it, like, and then basically test the waters, and see if the new format could be better, then that would be super interesting. But what I'm worried about is, like, you know, if Daze gets banned and then every single blue deck just becomes, you know, your different, you know, three color or four color or two color, you know, good stuff pile. And that wouldn't be super interesting, because right now, you know, blue decks are split into blue decks that play Daze and blue decks that play, like, Uro and Jace.
Yeah, yep. I think my opinion on the bans is that definitely, for example, those pushed cards, Daze pushes those cards a lot, the new threats. Like Ragavan, Deathrite Shaman, Renin 6, all those cards. I don't really have a super strong opinion myself, because it would just change, like Legacy is such a powerful format that I don't really know how it would be overall, but I definitely agree that Daze is pretty frustrating. Like, when I'm playing in and like a Delvermere, I'm like, ugh, how do I play around Daze? Like, it's literally a zero mana counterspell. So, you know, I could see a ban happening. I'm not sure what would be the best, but it's definitely true that Daze decks, I could see them why they would be problematic. Though, there's a lot of powerful cards, though the thing about powerful cards is usually you can hate them out, like Gaia's Cradle, Lion's Eye Diamond. A lot of the powerful cards, you have counterplay to them in the format, dredge decks or whatever. The only powerful card that doesn't really have counterplay, I would say, is probably Ancient Tomb, but I guess maybe then you're locked into playing more colorless cards. But I would say about Ragavan, I do think, why I would say it's problematic in one sentence, I thought it even became a bit of a copypasta. It's such a simple, like, game theory reason. It's two people sit down, one player plays Ragavan, and that player's win percent, just based on that fact, must be, like, so high, and that's all they did. So that's what I mean. If you play Delver on turn one, or you play even almost any one drop, I mean, maybe Deathrite Shaman was the closest one, but your win rate, it's not like your win rate's going to be that absurdly high, because those one drops don't snowball that fast. Like, if you play Goblin Guide or your Swiss Spear on turn one, obviously that's good, and that's what your deck's designed to do, but it's not like your win rate's going to be, like, absurdly high. But you play Ragavan on turn one, it puts so much pressure on your opponent because of the snowball it creates, that it just, that's why I think it's out of this world too much. Obviously, I could be overrating it because it's new, but it's just like you just sit down, somebody plays Ragavan on turn one, the amount of pressure it creates is just unreal compared to any other one drop, like...
Interesting. Okay, going back to, this idea of days being overpowered, I think there also is some merit to this idea of like old cards versus new cards, right? Like old cards is, I mean, honestly, let's be real. Legacy is a format played by like people who are casual, like fans of the game. Yes, obviously we're a more competitive group, but honestly, we've all been playing Legacy for like 5+ years. And like part of it is the part of the reason we enjoy it is because we get to play with these old, powerful, somewhat busted, degenerate cards like Daze and Wasteland. Whereas these new cards are, it's kind of like, get off my lawn. Like, why did you create this annoying thing that now I'm going to have to lose my, old card that I've been playing with all these years? So I think that is somewhat of a valid argument, in that, Mark Rosewater has come out and said that there has to be a place for like regressive shit, and basically it means like overpowered stuff like Brainstorm. So I don't know if Daze falls into that bucket or not, but I think they'll be more hesitant to ban it just because it's kind of like has been a staple of Legacy.
Yo, that's actually a really good point. I remember Todd Anderson, he made a tweet about this new, what is it, the new 7-mana Mirror Enforcer? It's like exactly this. It's got affinity for artifact. It's a 4/4, except it also has artifact cycling in it, which is like, or I don't know, whatever it is,
Basic
maybe
land
land cycling.
cycling?
Yeah, basic land cycling.
I
That's what
don't
it is.
know. I
And
don't know.
I, that card really just messed me up. It's like Sojourner or something like that, because it is basically like Mirror Enforcer, but better in every single way. Just like they also like completely invalidated, what is the other card, like Bone Splinters, they got rid of that and they put in a new card or something like that. I do not like, yeah, I guess I'm one of those people that really like enjoys appreciating like the history of the game, because like, let's be real here, right? For me at least, Magic is more about the social experience, hanging out with like my friends, like you guys, and like, experiencing like sitting at a table, looking someone in the eye, and like trying to figure out how the game's gonna break down, and it goes both ways, like, experiencing the frustration of winning and losing, or the joy of winning and losing and things like that. And I feel like this is like, maybe I'm stretching my mind and maybe I'm just like going off the wall here and like pulling threads here, but like those experiences to me, like they really mean something, right? Like when you see something like that clip where like, Kibler gets top decked by a bonfire, you're like, wow, that is a moment in Magic history, or like Cruel Ultimatum, those sort of things, right? And then when you just like reprint that card, I mean, I don't know if Mirror Enforcer really had its time to shine or a moment like that, but when you completely invalidate a card like that by printing something new, it's just like, I don't know. That also, so I that also leaves like a sour taste in my mind. So Bob, I do sort of understand what you're saying, which is like, Daze is a really cool card. It's got a lot of history, and if we just like lose that card with willy-nilly, like that also sucks. So it's just like, we're sort of like, it's like tug of war, or we're being pulled in many directions, and it's like, I mean, like ethically speaking, where do we go? Do we care about like the present right now? Do we respect the past? Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of like spitballing here. I'm just like saying a bunch of stuff.
I think one thing about Legacy that I get concerned about is, well, personally, I find the form, I like playing the format. Like, I find the gameplay pretty good, so I'd always be scared to go to move the format into a place where I wouldn't like the gameplay. But I don't know if that's the average consensus. Obviously, I have that opinion because I like to play Delver and I like Delver mirrors. Like, when Lurrus Delver was a thing, that was one of my favorite formats because I liked playing Lurrus Delver mirrors every round. But yeah, I definitely think, like, the all the, like, if you do something like Band-Aids, it's just hard to envision all the how it'll change the format and because it right now, the way the format's incentivized, usually formats are like kind of I don't know, they orbit around what the top cards are, and all the incentives are with that in mind. So like the format would like reorbit around, maybe it wouldn't be that big, maybe the decks would just be the same, and people wouldn't play Daze, but it could re-incentivize stuff in interesting ways. So it's hard to envision for me.
Yeah, well, okay, here's another question too. I mean, we all agree Delver is probably a little bit too good right now. But let's just say hypothetically, that 25% of the Delver decks that are being played now, say that goes down to a more reasonable amount, like 15%. And then that 10% is replaced by kind of like linear decks. Because I think that's basically what's going to happen. Like, in recent years, we've seen more powerful decks like Blackguard Reanimator, Depths, Hogak, like those are kind of the new decks that are coming along. Like we haven't had a new deck like, Death and Taxes come along in a while. If Delver gets replaced by these like more hyper-linear aggressive strategies, like I'd argue that's like worse gameplay. And even though, yes, it's more diverse, it doesn't necessarily mean Legacy is in a better place.
Well, I don't know about that, because it feels like, even though like it might be worse gameplay in the sense that it's you know, a little bit more straightforward, maybe a little bit easier. I don't really like using that word, but it might be a little bit easier. But is it really good gameplay if one person is winning constantly and the other person across the table is just kind of like sitting there just like exasperated the entire time? Like, I don't know. That's like one, that's good gameplay for like one person, but not the other. Whereas in this other world, like it just feels like at least there's a shot where like, you know, like my Rishadon Port plus Aether Vial deck is going to be able to do something. I see where you're coming from, though. I do see that there is some sort of complexity. But I want to really quickly talk about, you know, you said that, you know, we haven't really seen too many new decks. There was one sweet deck from this weekend that actually absolutely destroyed me. So full disclosure, by the way, I did pretty well in one of the events this weekend. I got second place in the Legacy Challenge. But you might ask, well, Anu, what did you lose to? What beat you in the finals? It's the same deck that beat me in the Swiss. And quite frankly, I'm really upset because I also lost to it to earlier today when I was playing against the deck. And it is... Wait for it. It's Affinity. Affinity is back. Bob, let's get into it. What do we talk about this deck?
Okay, so there's a couple different builds of this deck. Both have done well. One is the mono blue build, championed by Kelmaster P. And then the other one was created by a Japanese player, and that's blue-white Affinity. But they're a pretty similar shell. Essentially, they're all playing four Thought Monitor, which is, you know, basically it's the Treasure Cruise for Affinity. It's six and a blue with Affinity for artifacts. You get a 2/2 flyer, and then you also draw two cards. So it's basically Treasure Cruise for Affinity. And then Nettle Cyst, which is basically, you know, the living weapon version of Cranial Plating, if you will. It's a three mana for a artifact equipment that gets +1/+1 for each artifact and enchantment you control. Comes with a Germ attached. So, you know, they're going to have to deal with this 6/6.
Can we clarify this real quick? I feel like I don't want to call it Cranial Plating. I want to call it Baby Batter Skull. Can we just do that? Baby Batter Skull also just sounds cute.
I was thinking of it as Living Weapon Cranial Plating.
Okay. Fine. I guess I'm getting outvoted here. Fine. Cranial Plating it is. But Baby
Batter
Skull...
It doesn't have a lifelink of Batter Skull, so I think it's more like Cranial Plating. And obviously they have to answer the Germ because they're going to die to a 6/6. And then if they do, you can just equip it to another guy. So it's just extremely powerful. And then I didn't even get to possibly the most busted card, which people have described as, like free uncounterable Karn Scion of Urza that also tutors. And that is obviously the card Urza Saga, which is, I think pretty clearly, the best card in the set. Maybe it's Raghavan, but I think, Urza Saga is breaking other formats too, like Modern. It's just doing absolutely absurd things. Vintage. And so, you know, this is the land that comes in, can't be countered, creates two 8/8s, and then tutors for a 0 or 1. So
that's fucking bullshit! Ah! I'm sorry, I had to get that off my chest. It's been there for so long. Daniel, you were basically also sort of like shell-shocked too, right? When you were listening, like when you very briefly mentioned this card at the beginning, you were also kind of like giggling too. I mean, you've given me such a good example of like how cards like leverage mana and like you know, how basically Magic is a function of mana and how you break it down. So maybe in those terms as well, like Urza Saga, why is this ridiculous? And I'm going to ask you the question too. Is this a card that's also going to get banned?
When I saw this card, when I understood what this card did, I should say, because at first when I saw this card, I'm like, what's the mana cost? But yeah, when I understood what this card did, I was like, it's like when I saw Hogak or something, I'm like, how is this a mana card? Like, why are lands just making multiple creatures and tutoring stuff? I mean, it's cool because it's powerful. Like, when I see this card, I get some dopamine because it's cool, but I don't know if it's good for the game. Like, it's so powerful, it's so unbalanced. Like, it just, like... It's just crazy. It's like companions almost. It's like these cards, they just made the most crazy powerful cards possible. So, I mean, it's definitely cool. Like, these affinity decks are pretty cool. I even, one thing about the Delver deck I played is the Zoomers were freaking out about affinity, so we all put three Shattering Sprees in our deck to try and fix up our matchup a little bit against Urza Saga. But yeah, so basically I think it's cool, but I don't know exactly what they were thinking. Was this like, were they thinking this is a long term going to stay in the format? Are they going to keep printing cards like Urza Saga? Like, remember last year we had Companions and Lurrus, and everyone was freaking out. Like it's kind of like, how are they printing cards this good? Like, what's the long term plan? But then they're like, no, things are calming down. We have Strixhaven, Kaldheim, Zendikar. You know, things calm down a little bit. I mean, And but now we're back to, I mean, Modern Horizons 2, it's kind of like a special power set, so maybe that's why, but it's like, the set seems so unbalanced to me. I mean, I like it. It's probably one of my favorite sets I've seen. Like, the limited seems really good and lots of cool cards. And, you know, some of the formats were stale. I wasn't loving, you know, Modern and Legacy. They were getting kind of stale, and now they're all reinvigorated. But, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the vision is with all these powerful unbalanced cards, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense. Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also worried, too, because they announced this idea of, like, universes beyond. So these are more sets that are going to basically skip standard. So is that going to give them kind of a license to put, like, more higher-powered cards? Like, hopefully they're designed for Commander and not, like, super OP, but it definitely is something that has me worried. But I do agree, like, we do have to give them some credit. Like, the last three sets Daniel mentioned were not overpowered. They were appropriately powered. So, you know, I hope more sets are like that. Like, we just really don't need special printings for Modern and Legacy, in my opinion. Like, we can just keep going back to the standard model, and that was working for a while, you know?
Yep. Yeah, no, I hear you on that. But I don't know, man. Urza Saga, like, the Affinity deck is pretty sweet here. Basically, like, my experience playing against it, so for everybody interested, I played Bant Control. I'll get into this in just a second, because a lot of things changed for this deck as well, and that's probably going to be our last topic, just this new deck. But my experience playing against it was Urza Saga is just an incredibly grindy card, right? Because you get the two tokens, your opponent has to answer the two tokens, and after that, you get to draw a card, right? So, like, draw a card, I mean, like, tutor something from your deck, put it into play. Usually, we've seen, like, Retrofit or Foundry. Oh, you can also get, like, Mox Opal, maybe, like, you know, Expedition Map we've seen in Modern. Pithing Needle is another valid option. A lot of things that you can possibly get here. But that's the thing, right? Like, that, on top of, you know, it being very good with a card like Thought Monitor, like, Affinity actually has, like, resilience now, right? It has, like, a long game potential, whereas before, like, you look at Steel Stompy that existed way back when, and from my perspective, I was just like, all right, they have their thorns and they have their chalices. Sure, I can maybe ignore some of that because if I resolve, you know, like, my one of Terminus into a back to basics, you know, the game is locked up, right? They're not playing any more Magic. Whereas Urza Saga is more like, all right, well, here's two 8/8s, and my opponent doesn't have to play anything else because, you know, I have to deal with those 8/8s before I can even go on. And then they've like accumulated some resources over time, drawing cards naturally during their draw steps. It's really a frustrating experience. I mean, which is good for Affinity decks, I guess. From my perspective, I was sweating bullets the whole time, and eventually I just got grinded out. Me with my active Jace and Teferi and Uro against them with their, you know, enchantment Saga, which is actually kind of an interesting, you mentioned this before, Bob, but in terms of, like, counterplay, I've been thinking about what cards are pretty good, and I feel like Shattering Spree is one of those good cards. Like you mentioned, you can, like, destroy the enchantment land, because Urza Saga is an enchantment, so you can use, like, Disenchant to kill it in response to, you know, the Saga's ability to, you know, tick up and then, you know, get to that next ability. So if you do it, like, the turn they play the Saga, they don't even get mana out of it, which is really great. Or maybe you can do it the turn after, stop them from making those Construct tokens. But a little bit of counterplay. I think in general, though, one card that I wasn't really impressed with, it's going to sound crazy, but I wasn't really happy with Null Rod against these Affinity decks. Very specifically, the mono white or the blue white version that had, like, Esper Sentinels and Aether Sworn Canonists. And let me explain, because you might be saying, oh, Null Rod against, you know, the artifact deck, it has to be insane. But I found that, like, they do have a subset of draws, especially, like, in post-board games, they're going to, like, look for these kind of draws, right? Which is just like, all right, Plains, you know, maybe another mana source. Okay, and now I play my Urza Saga and I tap both of them to, you know, they can play around Null Rod to a degree. I was watching one of the VODs of the champion winner from Saturday, and that literally happened where the opponent went, like, turn two Null Rod and then almost died to constructs that were like 5/5s or something like that, except they eventually, like, top deck, like, a late Murktide Regent, and that was able to just, like, cross the finish line. So Null Rod, I have some hesitant doubts about, but I do really like the actual targeted, like, destruction ability. So Force of Vigor might be another one. Shattering Spree can't target the land, but you can get rid of a lot of other stuff. So I don't know, just things to think about. But the one card that Shattering Spree?
Yeah, it just hits any artifact, so it can hit the land. But go on.
It's an enchantment. It's an enchantment.
Oh, I thought you were talking really about, weird. Like, can it hit artifact lands? But yeah, go on.
Oh, okay, yeah. But yeah, like, transitioning into the last topic, my removal spell of choice now, and probably for the foreseeable future, is the white sorcery, it's Prismatic Ending. Reed Duke in an article said this is probably going to be the best removal spell of all time. And I looked at that article and I was like, wow, you know, comparing this to Swords to Plowshare seems kind of whack. But now that I've got some games under my belt, holy crap, this card is great. Prismatic Ending is like the white Abrupt Decay that I've been looking for this entire time. Like, Planeswalkers are really hard to deal with. Sylvan Library, Artifacts, those were really hard cards to deal with. And now Prismatic Ending is a very elegant card that just handles it all, except it fluctuates in mana price, right? Like, you might be like, okay, well, you could have just played Counsel's Judgment this whole time. But like Daniel was saying, mana does matter. And when you play Counsel's Judgment for 3 mana to kill their 1 or 2 mana threat, you are losing on mana, which means your opponent's able to do other stuff in the game. They're able to pull ahead in other ways. This is a card that scales with as much mana as your opponent spends. So you can spend 1 mana to kill a Delver of Secrets. You can spend, you know, 2 mana to kill a Sylvan Library. In weird situations, you can also kill like Chalice of the Void with a 2 mana Prismatic Ending because... It can kill things that are, you know, less CMC than the amount of colors you put into it as well. So it's a very exciting card, and I really do think that it's just going to be a staple in the format alongside another card that I'm really excited about. We didn't get to talk about this, but I'm going to quickly go over this because we're, you know, running a little bit long now. But the elementals for Magic Online were really, really, really good. And I think my favorite elemental, the most powerful one so far, is actually the green one, Endurance. So for 1 green and a green, it's got flash reach on a 3/4 body. That alone would probably be enough for me to get to play it. But then the other ability is that when it ETBs, up to one player can put their graveyard you can make one player put like their graveyard on the bottom of their deck. And that has so many like relevant ramifications, whether it is messing up a Doomsday or getting rid of like Hogak. Messing up Thassa's Oracle, getting rid of like Hogak and Bridge from Below, or even like against Delver, it's relevant because you can preemptively cut off Murktide Region or turn off Delirium from Dragon's Rage Channeler, which is important because Dragon's Rage Channeler has to attack if it has Delirium. So after it declares the attack, flash in your 3/4, get rid of their graveyard, block it, and you're totally okay. But oh, did I forget to mention that it's a 3/4 because it's a 3/4, so you can profitably block cards like Delver of Secrets and Dragon's Rage Channeler, and a 3 mana is just so easy to cast. Basically, I could write an entire essay about this card. I've done a lot of gameplay with it on stream, and I've talked about it a lot on stream, but I think this is going to be the future of Legacy, where every green deck is going to be playing this because it lines up so well against Delver just naturally. You guys have any thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely powerful, though. Delver does have one nice counterplay option of the Submerge, because I saw you were saying Delver's dead, we solved it. But it's definitely powerful, especially the utility against combo decks. Like, it interacts with Hogak, Life from the Loam. I saw a picture where Sam Rolfe, he Ragavan sold his opponent's Endurance, and then it was against lands, I think, and he shuffled back their entire Life from the Loam or whatever, you know, because lands fills up their graveyard slowly. Like, just shuffling your opponent's entire graveyard back in is a pretty powerful ability. I mean, it's not like Scavenging Ooze, it's a bit different, but Scavenging Ooze has been usually one of the best Magic cards, one of the strong Magic cards, just because a card that's already a good body, shuffling, like, interacting with your opponent's graveyard can be powerful, especially when people are leaning on that. And the fact that it also interacts with Doomsday, which also Doomsday is kind of a new deck, because it was reinvigorated back to when people were talking about new decks, but yeah, it's definitely, it looks pretty decent to me, yeah. But I was gonna say about Null Rod too. Yeah, in the Zoomer we were talking about what affinity hate to play, and the one simple reason why we weren't on Null Rod as much, or the way I thought about it personally, I'm like, okay, if I have Null Rod in my hand, it's not like I'm just gonna win the game necessarily, because Urza Saga could just be bigger than it, and it doesn't work as well late in the game when you're trying to cantrip into it. But if I have Shattering Spree in my hand, I feel like it should be pretty good. I mean, I saw some people mention Meltdown too. I didn't look into that as much because I thought it might not be as versatile. But and for some reason, I thought they have high CMC cards like Sotcast or the 3 mana one. So that's why I didn't look into it as much. Now I remember the one thing I want to say about the Prismatic Ending. The second I saw Prismatic Ending, I'm like, does this kill Acer Vial for 1 mana? Because Acer Vial's basically been one of my main nemesis cards for years. It's not like I lose to that card all the time, but
it's frustrating.
As somebody who's always thinks about games in terms of mana, it's like a Black Lotus, you know what I mean? Of like this card, like when your opponent plays a turn one, it's like, that's when all the theory flies out the window. I'm like, I can't win based on my traditional ways of thinking about mana. I have to like, you know, like Acer Vial's just so powerful. So any card that can remove Acer Vial is so powerful. Like, so when I saw Prismatic Ending, I'm like, wait, this kills Acer Vial for 1 mana? That's pretty good.
The way I'm hearing it is, if Aether Vial is a Black Lotus for this deck, then Prismatic Ending is basically anti-Black Lotus, and we all know that that's great. So, like we said, Prismatic Ending, pretty goated here. Okay, I lied. There was one more thing that I wanted to talk about, which is just wrapping up this whole like ban talk on Daze and Delver and things like that. My current take here, which I don't think I've actually said so far, is I am comfortable keeping Daze around for a hot second here after playing a little bit. My gut reaction is I want to sort of explore a world with Daze a little bit more, especially since we've got this influx of new cards like Saga, Ending, Endurance. And Bob, you know, you mentioned something really interesting on Twitter. You posted a tweet saying like, hey, like, you know, here are some cards, like, we know that Blue-Red is doing really well, but here are some cards that, you know, are, well, you know, you can board them in and they're like niche answers to Blue-Red, you know, maybe like, you know, and they'll do well. And I really like thought about that for a second. And to me, that sort of like rubbed me the wrong way, because I was thinking about this. It just feels like it's not really like card selection that's the problem against Delver. I really feel like almost to a degree, it's like the play patterns that go on, right? Because like you can only play so many removal spells in your deck. So the idea of like trading one for one, you know, to kill a Delver threat or to kill the next Delver threat and to kill the next Delver threat after that is like valid to a degree. But then when you start factoring in cards like Daze and Force of Will and like Expressive Iteration, that is a big one too. It just seems like the current iteration of Delver, it's just like the best Jund deck we've ever had, period. You know what I mean? Like it's grindy, mid-rangey, but also has like really quick kills and like free wins and all that sort of stuff. I feel like the real solution is sort of like, how do I explain this? The real solution is like, oh man, it goes back to Counterbalance and Sensei's Divining Top Theory, but it's always just been like Prism the Mountain, you can win, right? Like look, a great example is like how Mono Red Stompy is going to win against Delver. You don't win by, you know, like deploying all your stomps and your Goblin Rabble Masters, because Delver will find a way to get out of it. It has to be Chalice on one. It has to be Trinisphere. Delver should never get a chance to play the game. Otherwise, they will find a way to, you know, squeak out a win, like through the most random ass way possible, and you'll just end up with an L at the very end of it. So I think that's why I like a card like Endurance, because, you know, it's a card that sticks around over time. Not only does it kill Dragon's Rage Channeler, but then it'll kill the Delver of Secrets that comes after and after and after, which is, you know, Murktide is the exception there, but I don't know, that's just my general thought. Like, most removal spells are not very good. We also need the perfect mix of, like, defensive payoff spells, or at least those are the words that Julian used in response to the tweet. And I really like that, because defensive haymakers, like, that's something, right? Like, you need to be able to control the board after the fact. Otherwise, Delver will just, like, you know, keep selecting and surveilling and doing that sort of stuff, and they'll stick at it and you'll still lose. So I don't know. That was just my thought process.
Yeah, well, Earl is a pretty nice card to be able to deal with Delver to some degree in that way. But yeah, I think the reason is specifically, I mean, a lot of times I saw Bob was tweeting about recently, like how to beat Delver, what's good against Delver. And I think the thing is, or basically the way I think about it is, and this is what I was using when I was looking at Standard, is looking at the way cards, decks line up. Like, for example, if you take in Standard, not to get too off topic, you're like, is this matchup good or bad? And I'll just look at the cards the decks play and which ones line up good against, like, well or poorly against other decks. Like, for example, the adventure creatures, Bone Crusher and Lovestruck Beast, they don't line up well if your opponent plays like Heartless Act or Binding of the Old Gods or stuff like that. So I was like, that's why those cards line up well against those cards. So that's not saying about the matchup or overall, but it's just looking at the specific cards. So like, you look at a deck like Affinity and you're like, well, Shattering Spree lines up well against Affinity. Or you look like Elves with Gaia's Cradle, you're like, you know, Board Wipes line up well against that, or Dredge, Leyline lines up well against that. But you look at Delver, it's not like cards really line up well against it. Obviously, Carpet of Flowers is a card that's uniquely good against it. Having removal spells plus Uro can be good against it, you know, sometime. But it's like, it's hard to hate out a deck if you don't... The reason it's hard for cards to line up well against it is because the deck is just cheap interaction, cheap threats. So it's not like there's really any particular cards that line up that well against it, so it's hard to cheese wins by it. And that's also like by the Vintage Cube example. Like, Vintage Cube is all these powerful decks, and then there's some decks that you draft sometimes where it's just cheap threats and cheap interaction. Like, it's not really the deck itself is kind of evading threats because it's just playing good cheap spells. Like, how are you supposed to have your deck line up well against them? It's just forcing you to play a 50-50 Jund type game that's naturally just evading kind of the natural hating. So if you just go after Delver trying to say, I want to beat Delver, I want to hate it out, you have to understand, like, the reason it's good is because it's a 50-50 deck. So it kind of naturally evades that. I think that's why people find it frustrating too. I mean, maybe because it's broken too, but yeah.
I mean, okay, I think all the things you guys said are valid. I definitely think Carpet and Uro is kind of like a default, you know, blue soup way to beat Delver, and it's very strong. But I also don't think that, I mean, I agree, Delver has fewer weaknesses than almost any other deck, but this current build does have a couple weaknesses, and one of them I'll just point out is that, hey, we have 12 one-drops, that's awesome. What is something good against 12 one-drops? Well, I think something like Blast Zone, EE, and Powder Keg, like, those are kind of cheaper 2-3 mana board wipes that are, you know, on the table now, and so I think those cards should see more play. Another card is Meek Stone. Other than Raghavan, all their stuff is going to kind of be trapped under a Meek Stone, and so they'll need to kind of either answer it or get there with Burn. So, I mean, I think there are, you know, very powerful cards that, you know, got better against this specific build of Delver compared to, you know, other Delver decks.
Cool. All right. That's where we're going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening. At Elo Punters on Twitter, be sure to let us know what your thoughts are, if you have any questions, if you really like my voice, you know, let me know. Or if I gotta say, I was really impressed with a lot of the theory that Daniel presented, so if you agree with that, you know, also let us know. But that's it. That's gonna be episode 23 wrapping up. We'll see you guys next time. From Anurag, Bob, and Daniel, bye.